Hello, I'm Lenor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization has declared Africa free from wild poliovirus. This certification comes 4 years after Nigeria, the last polio endemic country in Africa, recorded its final case of wild polio. The certification marks a major step toward global eradication of the virus. In Nigeria, polio survivors are celebrating the eradication of the virus, a milestone for the country and the entire continent. Timothée Obiezu profiles the president of the Polio Survivors Association, who has been helping other survivors through sport. Take a listen.
Michael Zafran, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good evening. I'm very happy to be here with you today.
August 25th is the date that Africa is being declared polio-free. Talk to us about the significance of this outcome and how we got there.
Well, this is an extraordinary achievement, and it shows what nations and countries can do when they work together. And when sort of hundreds of thousands of frontline workers dedicate their time to this. Back in 1996, when Nelson Mandela launched at the meeting of the Africa Union the effort to kick polio out of Africa, there were 75,000 children that were paralyzed by polio every year on the African continent. And, you know, and we've reached a stage where we can declare Africa free of the wild poliovirus, which is just an extraordinary achievement. It's been a hard battle by the countries themselves, by the health workers vaccinating children, by the parents bringing their children to the vaccination effort. So it's been quite complicated, and it's been more complicated than in some countries than in others. Back in 2000, we had outbreaks that covered the whole of West and Central Africa, and we had to organize synchronized campaigns across 17 countries to actually ensure that we stop the outbreaks. And this has gone on, you know, for many years, unfortunately, because with polio, if you do not vaccinate every single child, then the virus has a chance to survive and can spread to other children and eventually find children that are not vaccinated. In 2016, we believed that we were actually on the cusp of being able to declare Africa free of wild poliovirus. But after 2 years, without having detected a single case of wild poliovirus in Africa, we had an outbreak in the northeastern part of Nigeria, in the Borno state, and we had cases, 4 cases that were detected in Borno. And you know that the specific situation of the Borno state or that area under the control of Boko Haram sort of made it impossible to access all of the children. The program responded very quickly. And since that time, when we had cases in Borno, many countries were put on an alert. It was a regional public health emergency was declared. And, you know, countries in the Lake Chad Basin sort of coordinated their efforts to actually fight back this appearance of the poliovirus. We thought it had disappeared, but unfortunately, some children had not been accessed because of the situation in the Borno state. And in the Lake Chad, and sort of basically Cameroon, Chad, Niger, Central African Republic, and Nigeria worked together through a coordinated effort to actually eradicate the virus. They've implemented strategies to actually reach children, even under very complicated and difficult and dangerous situation, to be able to vaccinate every single child. There were special strategies put in place in Nigeria, reaching every child, reaching every settlement to make sure that they work together with the armed forces that made it sort of safe for the vaccinators to go and access some specific areas. But here's the result. The last case of wild poliovirus was on 21 August of 2016, and we're basically 4 years past that date. We normally ask for 3 years without a detection to actually consider whether we can certify a country or a region polio-free. So after 3 years, the African Regional Certification Commission has started to look very carefully at the the information at the data of all countries in the African region. And then recently they've looked more carefully at the remaining countries, including Nigeria. And now they are in a position to certify indeed, based on very good quality surveillance, and access confirmation that we have access to the children in all areas, that indeed the wild poliovirus has disappeared.
How do we maintain this gain?
Well, there are still risks of vaccine-derived polioviruses outbreaks, which we see in some countries, and these rare occurrences occur in places where not enough children are vaccinated. It is, we call them vaccine-derived. It is not caused, it is not the virus that is in question. It is the fact that we don't vaccinate enough children. And we have these outbreaks. So what is critically important is, of course, to vaccinate every single child and strengthen the routine immunization program in all countries in Africa. The problem also is that while we don't detect the wild poliovirus in Africa, the wild poliovirus continues to circulate in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And no country in Africa, with the current sort of rhythm of international travel, no country in Africa is safe from importation of the wild poliovirus from Pakistan or Afghanistan. So we need to maintain very high levels of population immunity using the good vaccines that are safe that we have available. And too many countries in Africa have not so good routine immunization coverage, and they need to strengthen their routine immunization, their essential immunization program, to make sure that no child ever gets paralyzed by polio.
Vaccine-derived polio is still a threat. You mentioned that. Talk to us about what needs to be done to ensure that Africa is polio-free, whether it's from wild poliovirus or vaccine-derived polio altogether.
Okay, so on the wild poliovirus front, the only type of wild poliovirus that remains in existence in the world is type 1, one of three types. The other two have been declared officially eradicated. And the African countries, all countries in the world, need to continue to vaccinate with the existing vaccines. With the vaccine-derived outbreaks, we've got basically outbreaks in a number of countries in Africa, which are caused by the fact that not enough children are being vaccinated when we use the vaccine. So we have a strategy to actually fight back these outbreaks. First, improving the quality and the speed of these vaccination campaigns. We also need, at the same time, to strengthen the routine immunization coverage with what we call the inactivated poliovirus vaccine, the injectable vaccine. And we also are implementing an effort to develop a new vaccine, the novel oral polio vaccine type 2, which is less likely to actually sort of have the risk that we see associated with the current vaccine. So all of this is in process, and we will ensure that, you know, we support countries in a most effective manner to implement those strategies. But countries, first and foremost, need to strengthen their immunization program with all vaccine antigens, including polio, of course.
Conflict has been one of the impediments in getting all children to be vaccinated. But there is also another issue, which is the anti-vax movement, a lack of trust in vaccines in general. To what extent is anti-vax a challenge at this point?
It is an issue all over the world. I would say that in Africa, it has been an issue up and down. And in some areas, for instance, back in 2010, there was sort of a in Nigeria, there was a very strong anti-vaccination movement that caused major outbreaks. I think we're working very closely with communication specialists. We're working with community leaders at country level. We're working with traditional leaders. We're making sure that we communicate through the community leaders the correct information so that people and mothers and parents are not sort of afraid of vaccinating their children. Clearly, communication is important, sort of embarking the traditional leaders, the respected sort of either religious or community leaders is critically important. And this is how we've been able to sort of overcome some of the challenges, either in Kenya, when there were some challenges, not so much with polio, with tetanus, toxoid, there were anti-vaccination movement, in Nigeria with polio, and all over the world, every now and then you have a rumor that sort of inflates and sort of creates a big anti-vaccination sentiment. Like all rumors, all sort of theories that vaccines are bad for the children, we need to respond at all levels to the communities, reassure them, show them how the vaccines are produced, how they are safe, and sort of reassure them that indeed it is the right move to do to vaccinate your children. It is difficult to get rid entirely of this anti-vaccination movement, but you know, with sort of transparent communication, we've been in the past able to address it.
So now Africa is declared polio-free. Nigeria is no longer a polio-endemic country. What happens now with Afghanistan and Pakistan, the two remaining polio endemic countries? What is the strategy by WHO to ensure that they also reach the milestone to be declared polio-free?
So WHO, together with all of the global polio eradication initiative partners, which includes Rotary International, of course, as an important partner, UNICEF, Center for Disease Control of the United States, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, is working very hard to support the government of Pakistan and Afghanistan to implement the strategies that have worked everywhere else in the world. Again, here we have had some setbacks in the past couple of years with anti-vaccination rumors that have led to a spread of the virus. Of course, the current situation with the pandemic of COVID-19 has put a halt on some of the activities that we're carrying out in these countries. And so the virus has had time to gain some ground and circulate more. We've resumed activities now. We are focusing on identifying the very local specific issues that have led parents to not bring their children to vaccination, or for us, have led us or the program to miss a large number of children, allowing the virus to circulate. So there's a lot of communication, better understanding also how some of the communities are mobile and how do they move and you know, how do they operate, communicate with them better, understand better their motivation, and sort of ensure that we're going to provide them with an access to vaccination. We also intend to better serve the communities where the virus continues to circulate by providing them services that go beyond just the polio vaccination. We're trying to integrate with other vaccination for vaccine-preventable diseases, and sort of see how we can join forces with other actors to provide access to safe water, to a package of basic health services, so that the communities see that we don't only provide polio drops, which of course protects them against polio, but for them, polio may not be such an issue when you know they're suffering from measles or other vaccine-preventable diseases. So we want to ensure that we sort of come with a broader range of services that these communities really demand and need, so that we can tackle the polio problem once and for all.
Michel Zafran, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, for more on the fight against polio in Africa as well as globally, I spoke with Michel Zafran, the director for polio eradication with the World Health Organization.
Miss Bawolawandidi became paralyzed in both legs after contracting the polio virus as a child. As a lover of games, he was unable to enjoy his favorite sports with his able-bodied counterparts. In 1988, he founded Parasoccer for Disabled Polio Survivors to play. Not long after, he also played a part in creating Nigeria's Polio Survivors Association. The aim was to use survivors' stories to drive awareness and vaccinations.
Many people are rejecting polio based on what they believe. Some believe it is Western manipulation to reduce the number of Nigerians. Some believe in the religion of Islam that is not accepted. And otherwise, everybody has his own belief. And the government always find it difficult to get to some people because they have already decided not to take the oral polio vaccination.
The game, which Lawan started as a young man, has become a national sport with a major tournament held each October to mark World Polio Day. Polio survivors like Bello Abdullahi, who have been part of the game since 1997, are para soccer stars. He has also made enough money to do business and support his family.
So through that sport, I've been getting house in FCT. I get house, and then I'm doing small business. If you look down here, you see my refrigerator, like two of them. I get to buy this refrigerator through sport.
Nigeria, the last country on the continent to report cases, had not seen an instance since 2016, when cases surged during unrest in the Borno region. Faiza Schweib is executive director of the National Primary Healthcare Development Agency. He says an insurgency involving Boko Haram militants stalled progress made against polio. Boko Haram has been fighting to carve out an Islamic caliphate based in Nigeria.
And we could not access kits behind the enemy lines. When the kits started coming out, then it became obvious that there was still some transmission going on in Borno around the Lake Chad region. But beyond all of that, there was insecurity as a result of the Boko Haram insurgency. That is what created many communities that were inaccessible.
The victory for the African region comes more than two decades since Nigeria joined the fight to eradicate polio in Africa. While many celebrate, Schweib says it's important to remain vigilant.
As long as we continue to have two endemic countries, Pakistan and Afghanistan, then there's always that potential that there will be importation of the wild polio virus to any African country, to Nigeria as it were. So of course that concern is there.
A disability rights group in Nigeria estimates 40% of people with disabilities in the country are polio survivors, and that most of them live in abject poverty. Beyond Nigeria's polio eradication, polio survivor Ms. Baho Lawan Didi says he will keep working to give other survivors hope through sports. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
That was Michelle Zifran, the director for polio eradication with the WHO. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to the coronavirus pandemic. Zimbabwe's health crisis worsens as COVID-19 infections mount among frontline health workers. The country has over 5,800 confirmed cases of the new coronavirus, with over 150 deaths. Andy Gondo gives us more.
Over 480 health workers have contracted COVID-19 in Zimbabwe, near 11% of cases recorded to date, according to the Ministry of Health and Child Welfare. Those infected include doctors, laboratory scientists, nurses, nurse trainees, nurse aides, general workers, and pharmacists. Masimba Dean is the National Vice President of Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, ZHDA.
There is need, you know, to make them safe by providing adequate personal protective clothing, as well as incentivizing them with regards to remuneration.
Anele Bebe, a recent past Secretary General of ZHDA, says the situation in the country's hospitals is a powder keg.
Unfortunately, as you can see, that lots of health workers have already contracted the virus. 480 is a large number. So you must bear in mind that this 480 figure is for people who have been tested. We must also take this into perspective that probably we might see ourselves with very few health workers who will be going to work, because most of them will be in quarantine.
Nurses are the hardest hit, with 37% of the confirmed cases among health workers. Nurses have been on strike for nearly 2 months, demanding personal protective equipment and salary payment in US dollars. According to the City Health Department in Bulawayo, more than 100 nurses at Impilo Central and United Bulawayo hospitals have contracted the virus, forcing them into quarantine. Even though Siziva, Zimbabwe Nurses Association branch chair from Impilo, says that nurses are particularly vulnerable because they spend long hours with patients.
Instead, the supplies are going down. And if we check, like now, only a few nurses, especially those in the managerial task and those in on probation, are the ones who are reporting for duty. You are just supplied one face mask a day. If you are like, you will get a plastic apron on top of that. So we still hope and pray for better supplies, especially in Bulawayo hospitals. Engucheni, if you go at Engucheni, you find that they are using makeshift gowns which are sewn in the laundry department. And those gowns, they are not autoclaved. They will be used maybe and reused throughout the week. If they are lucky to be washed, they are going to be washed maybe once or twice a week. We are not ready, actually, or we've lost control for this thing.
Siziba says that health workers use public transport, risking further spread of the virus in the community. Dr. Bebe agrees.
Lack of protective gear will affect everyone, from health workers to communities.
Bebe says that health workers feel let down by government, but he warns the public is not taking heed of public health measures, including lockdowns, putting frontline health workers at risk. He deplores what he says is a lackadaisical wearing of face masks. The doctor says that public education about COVID-19 must be as relentless as the public health communications at the onset of HIV/AIDS in the 1980s. He says the public needs clear information on issues ranging from how to care for COVID-19 patients at home to addressing the stigma attached to the new coronavirus. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo.
Prison in northern Uganda has been shut down after three quarters of the inmates tested positive for COVID-19 over the weekend. They have been isolated in quarantine. Nambi reports.
The inmates and prison staff who tested positive were among the 318 COVID-19 cases that Uganda registered on Saturday, the country's largest one-day total. Dr. Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
The Ministry of Health undertook further investigations in Amuru prisons. Out of the 205 inmates, 153 inmates tested positive. Out of the 28 prison staff, one tested positive.
These have now been evacuated to Gulu main prison for treatment and quarantine, while the Amuru prison will be sprayed as measure to control further the COVID-19 spread. Frank Baine is Uganda Prisons Service spokesperson.
We have managed to evacuate the sick ones who are asymptomatic, by the way, to Gulu prison treatment center, and we have taken the staff to Gulu Referral Hospital. The other ones who didn't test positive remained in Amuru, but they are under observation, and we are hoping to have another test carried out to ensure that nobody is sick behind there.
A joint surveillance team from the Ministry of Health and Center for Disease Control are undertaking risk assessment and contact tracing in Amuru district. Baine has called for mass testing of all prisoners and staff to avoid further spread of the virus to other prisons.
So we expect Minister of Health to respond to us and have all these sensitive areas covered by testing everybody. If we are to avoid continuous contamination of the prison's population with COVID, the police must start testing suspects before they bring them to us.
There are concerns, congestion in the prison system, which has 61,867 prisoners and 12,060 staff, could make the avenues for the spread of COVID-19. Earlier this year, President Yoweri Museveni pardoned more than 800 prisoners as part of efforts to reduce that risk. Uganda is currently experiencing a surge in cases of COVID-19. Authorities have blamed lax public attitudes since the country's lockdown was eased and have threatened to reinstate the restrictions. Uganda has registered 2,362 cases with 22 deaths. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
In South Africa, the government is under more pressure to crack down on corruption related to supplies of equipment to protect people against COVID-19, after the chief of the World Health Organization equated it with, quote, murder. Law enforcement agencies are investigating scores of companies for allegedly stealing millions of dollars meant to be used to combat the coronavirus. Darren Taylor reports.
For a quarter century, South Africans have heard promises that senior officials would be jailed for corruption. Scandal after scandal has implicated prominent ruling party members, yet not a single one is in prison. President Cyril Ramaphosa says this time it'll be different. A man who knows the ANC really well, University of Johannesburg professor Ashwin Desai, is skeptical.
Medical advice will tell you that you can't lance your own boil because it spreads the infection. The people doing the lancing of the boil themselves are trying to jump into the boil and partake of the disease of corruption.
Director of Public Prosecutions, Advocate Shamila Batoi, says her investigators will prioritize certain cases involving PPE fraud because there are too many to probe.
We have limited resources, and so, you know, we certainly won't be able to do all, but we need to send out a very strong message that law enforcement is up to the task and that the wheels of justice are indeed turning.
Again, words and promises that South Africans have heard many times before. Justice Minister Ronald Lamola has now made a new pledge of 12 special courts to prosecute COVID-related crimes.
We understand the urgency of this issue because it is interlinked with what society is looking for, that there must be speedy resolution to these issues if and when they arise.
South Africa's tax chief, Edward Kisweta, says it's not enough for some in the ANC to award themselves multi-million rand tenders to supply medical equipment they never deliver. Their greed is apparently bottomless.
Not declaring income from PPE, even though they get that from government, they still choose to cheat government. They have outstanding tax returns. They file fraudulent or incorrect returns. They obtain tax clearance certificates by fiddling the system, and they're not registered for VAT.
Desai says the ANC's policy of cadre deployment is largely to blame. This unwritten law rewards members with senior state positions, not for their skills, but for their loyalty to the party and ability to win votes during elections.
There's a kind of strain and a spine to the ANC that is shameless. And I think until we deal with this idea of cadre deployment, that you're not answerable to the country, you're not answerable to the municipality, but you're answerable to the people who employed you, there's going to be a problem.
The PPE scandals, says Desai, show corruption didn't end when Ramaphosa replaced Jacob Zuma a couple of years ago.
Zuma's faction was defeated at one level and pushed back, and Ramaphosa came to power. But, you know, once again, in order for him to come to power, it wasn't an ideological battle. He had to enter this pit of corruption and pay people to vote for him. So there was never an immaculate conception, right? You sort of get rid of the original sin in Zuma and so on, and you come tainted yourself and carrying that baggage.
It's Desai's view that the PPE fraud offers the ultimate evidence that corruption was never a Zuma problem. It remains a cancer within the ANC that's slowly killing the country. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that's it for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guests today, Mr. Michael Zaffran, or Michelle Zaffran, of the World Health Organization. For more on today's coverage of the latest on the coronavirus pandemic, visit voanews.com. Check us out at facebook.com/VOA Health Chat and let's keep the conversation going. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Ormudu, in Washington with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and wash your hands more frequently, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Salih, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.